Hi, and welcome to the Psychology Sisters podcast.
Just two besties on a quest to normalise the dialogue around mental health. I'm Kat, a registered psychologist.
And I'm Amy, a registered psychotherapist. In our episodes, we combine our skills, professional and personal experiences with a light sprinkling of science and a dabble of fun to help you to become informed, in control and empowered.
Now let's dive deep into today's episode. Hello, everybody.
Welcome back to another episode.
Woohoo! Today we are talking about the pill
and mental health
and how hormones can impact on mental health. Very interesting topic.
It is.
We didn't get requested this, but this is something that we really wanted to talk about because it is something that has affected both Amy and I personally, and we've seen it professionally as well. So before we do jump into this episode, Amy, how are you? How is your week?
You always ask me. I always like, I'm going to be the one to ask Kat this week, and then you do, and I'm like, damn it. My week has been great. I haven't really done much this week. Nothing big or exciting.
How's your holidays going?
My holidays are going great. I'm loving not having to plan anything or be anywhere by a specific time. It's great just to wing it and go with the flow. So yeah, that's probably my peak is being able to go with the flow and take some time off and get some much needed R&R. And my pit is probably my savings have gone a little bit askew.
Okay.
But that's fine. It's not a pit. I can't really think of a pit, but that would be my pit if there was to be a pit.
I really think that we should do a money and mental health episode. Yes. Do you think that would be interesting?
I think
like the psychology of saving money and spending money. Wouldn't that be interesting? Because there is one behind it.
I need that in my life.
I'll sit you down. No, but I can't talk. I'm also poverty stricken. My pit and peak, I will say that. Okay. So last episode, I was so on my high horse. I was so stoked because I hadn't done anything to embarrass myself. Well, brace yourselves. Okay. I was at the gym the other day and oh my God, Ames, do you get annoyed when people do not unstack their weights?
Sometimes, yeah.
Sometimes? I really thought you'd be more on my side for this.
I feel like it's like a little extra bit of your workout, like putting the weights away and doing the, yeah.
But I think.
I also used to work in a gym, so it's kind of like, eh.
I thought that would make you more frustrated because you worked in a gym. Maybe it's because it's my gym. They're quite annoying with their weights. I always think, okay, what if an older person or someone with an injury came into the gym or someone who's just starting out and they found a whole squat rack, leg rack, whatever weights just already loaded up?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be intimidating? I always think of those people and I'm like, Anyway, so I'm so sick of it. I'm someone who quietly seethes until I can't take it anymore and then a volcano erupts. So here I am at the gym, my normal gym that I go to 6 days a week. And I just, for the last few weeks, it's just been grinding my gears. People not unstacking their weights. Anyway, I had finally had enough of it last week and I saw these two guys working out and oh man, I don't want to judge anybody, but it definitely looked like they'd been to the gym for quite a while and were very arrogant of their surroundings. Like they were just using all the different types of machines. They weren't, you know, someone might've been on a machine and they've just gone in between, like when they've gone to the bathroom and taken that machine. Mm-hmm. Anyway. So after they had finished working out, I noticed that they had three machines going for them. They had three different machines. They had kept all their weight on each machine. Like they hadn't unstacked. And I was like, this is... Anyway, so I was like, nah, I've had enough. I'm just going to say something here. Anyway, I walk over to them. I puffed out my chest. I was like, I'm going to be so brave here. I was like, oh, excuse me. Are you finished with this machine? And they looked at me like, yep, it's free. And I was like, no, I actually, you need to unstack this because people here, I know a lot of people here who come here have injuries and can't unstack themselves. And they were like, oh, okay, yep, like I'll unstack, like blah, blah, blah. As I walked off, I felt so proud. And then I tripped over a barbell.
Oh.
Tripped over and I skinned my knee.
No.
Yes. I was like, this would happen.
Well, kudos to you for
Thank you. But I also, I was like, yes, such a boss babe, killing it. And then I fucking tripped over. So that was my pit, but also my peak. I was pretty proud of myself.
Alrighty. So jumping into the pill and mental health. So I am so passionate about this topic. I feel like it is so under estimated. I feel like there's not enough emphasis or research or just information out there for women regarding the pill. I think the pill has been amazing for being able to control when and if we want to get pregnant. I feel like it's been great in allowing women power and autonomy over their bodies. But just like any medication, it comes with risks and side effects. And I think from my own personal experience and working with clients as well, because it's so normal to have or to take a contraceptive pill, we don't do a lot of research. We don't have a lot of knowledge around side effects, how it can affect different individuals, and I guess the risks involved in taking the pill.
I know. And I feel like it is quite well known about the physical side effects of the pill, but how much is known about the mental health side effects of the pill? I actually, when we were doing this episode, I looked at my pill packet when I used to take it, and nothing on the label said anything about a side effect of mental health. Nothing.
So some pills will say that there is a side effect of mood swings, and that's it.
So isn't that really interesting? If you're someone who does experience quite a mood fluctuation from the pill, you would probably think, oh, maybe I'm just being crazy. Silly. Yeah. Maybe I'm crazy. Mm. It's so disempowering for women. Yes, it is very empowering, but at the same time, it really affects mood. So how does it affect mood? Well, I just want to give you a quick idea of, you know, there's two types of pills. So obviously there's lots of different brands of pills, but there's two types. So there's combination pills, which is contains estrogen and progesterone, and there's mini pills, which contain only progesterone.
Progesterone is the hormone that females already have, and progesterone is kind of like testosterone. It's kind of like a women's equivalent to
testosterone.
Okay. That's how I interpret it. Yeah. So I'm not a doctor, I'm not a scientist, but from my understanding of how the pill works is basically what it gives the body is synthetic hormones, and that is in the form of estrogen and progesterone, and they have many downstream actions, but what Kat's talking about when she says there's combination or just progesterone, that is the hormone equivalent to kind of like testosterone.
Yeah.
Is how I understand it.
So it's so normal to be on the pill. I think when I was reading the stats, about 75% of women between 15 and 35 are on the pill, which is quite a lot. But it's really interesting that there's not really much research or acknowledgement of the pill. And I think that really comes back to doctors when they prescribe. I remember when I first got my pill, there was zero warning, zero questions, zero anything about the side effects, the psychological side effects physically that the pill could even have.
Yeah. I remember when I first got my prescription for the pill, I would have probably been 15 or 16, had no idea of any side effects. I was just like, yep, I'm going to be sexually active, so I need to be on the pill. Yeah. And little did I know that there are side effects from weight gain, blood clotting, sore breasts, headaches, cramping, to depression, anxiety, severe mood fluctuations. And I feel like these are all things that really doctors really need to make their clients aware of.
Yes, absolutely. Because yeah, it's just so common. I know when I was on the pill earlier last year, Ames, I remember having this conversation with you, and that I hadn't joined the dots. I just started going on the pill, and I said to you, I remember saying to you, Amy, I just don't feel like myself. I feel like there's something wrong with me. And I was explaining to you, I guess, what was going on in my life. And you were like, yeah, that's not a normal reaction to what's going on in your life. Like, could it be the pill? And I was like, whoa. Yeah, it definitely could be the pill. And it was crazy because I was crying every day over really small things. I was getting into arguments. I just wasn't feeling – the best way I can describe it is I wasn't feeling me. I wasn't feeling myself. And I feel like for so many pill users, I know that sometimes you feel that too because you're currently on the pill, yeah? And you feel like – tell me what it feels like, I guess – physical symptoms and psychological symptoms, like, or side effects of being on the pill.
Yep. So I'm a relatively petite person, and I know that when I go back or when I use the pill, I do tend to gain a little bit more weight than what is usual for my own kind of normal weight range or set point. And I do notice that my breasts become more sore and they get a lot bigger. So that is something that I've definitely experienced since going back on the pill. Mm. I also noticed that I'm more prone to low moods and feeling depressed more often. I'm usually quite a bubbly, happy, positive person. And I know that when I'm on the pill, I tend to have a little bit more of a low mood. Mm. And I do experience more fluctuations in my mood being lower than what I do when I'm not on the pill. And this is due to, I think it's really important to remember that when we're taking medication, any medication, it affects things in our brain, right? So we're taking hormones, synthetic hormones that have an excitatory and inhibitory effect on our neurotransmitters, which are what make us feel things, right? Mm-hmm. So of course that it's going to have an effect. Of course that's going to be an influence in our mood and our emotional functioning. And I don't think many people think about that when they take the pill. I think they think, great, this is going to stop me from falling pregnant. Awesome. And that's
it.
Or it's
going to help my skin.
Or it's going to help my skin. Yeah. Or actually, I'm not giving the pill enough credit here. So the pill has been known to be great if you have polycystic ovarian syndrome or PCOS. It's been awesome in some cases. Everyone's different. But it has been awesome in some cases in alleviating some symptoms of PCOS. It has also been great if you have, what's that one where, endometriosis.
Yeah.
So if you, gosh, the wine is really flowing, people. Yeah. if you have endometriosis, the pill in some cases has been effective in making those symptoms a little bit more comfortable. In some cases, the pill has been great if you do experience severe cramping. It can alleviate cramping. But in some cases, it can make it worse. So it really is just luck of the draw with the pill.
And everybody responds to it differently.
Yeah. But yeah, for me, I definitely notice my mood is lower. I am subjective to a little bit of weight gain. It's nothing crazy, but I do definitely notice that I retain more fluid and I do generally put on about 5 or 6 kilos. So I sit 5 or 6 kilos heavier than I do when I'm not on the pill.
Isn't that crazy? One pill can have such a huge effect on physical,
mental, psychological,
emotional.
It is
crazy.
And it's never talked about.
It's never talked about. I think that I'm so frustrated that this is not something that is discussed with doctors and clients. If you have a good doctor, then hopefully they have told you about the psychological effects. But I've never, you know what? I'm such a doctor slut. I go around to so many doctors. I reckon I've had about 7 doctors in my lifetime, which probably isn't that many, but none of them, you know, when you get a script filled or you just need a new prescription, not one doctor. I've been to males, I've been to females, different cultures, different ages. Not one doctor has ever said to me,
beware of the psychological effects of the pill.
Yeah. You know, you might experience depression. You might experience really huge mood fluctuations. The only thing they've ever said to me was, does your family have a history of blood clots? And I'm like, no. And they're like, all right, cool. Here's 3 months. Mm. Isn't that so dangerous to someone? Or make sure
you use a condom.
Imagine if you had a pre-existing diagnosis of depression and they hadn't asked you. Imagine the effect of the pill on your already diagnosed depression. Wouldn't that be crazy? Wouldn't that be such, it's almost like the doctor hasn't judged this properly. Anyway, we wanted to talk about this today because yes, we're not doctors and we can't give you pharmacological or medical advice, but what we can give you is information about the mental health side of things. So countless studies have identified strong links between taking the pill and poor mental health. There's even been some studies who have found that it has left women who have not previously been diagnosed with depression, who have received a depression diagnosis and even have triggered suicidal thoughts after taking hormonal contraception.
Yeah.
So that's the pill. There was a study in 2016. It was a Danish study. Yeah. You've researched the same study. And it examined the effect of hormonal contraception over 1 million women, and they studied it over the course of a few years. They found that compared with non-users, so non-users of contraception, women and teenage girls aged between 15 to 34 who used hormonal contraception had a 1.23 times higher risk of being diagnosed with depression, especially adolescents.
And I think it's important to know for this study, the study excluded women who had previously been diagnosed with depression or had taken antidepressants previously. So these were participants who did not have any diagnosis of depression or had not previously taken antidepressants.
No, they excluded people with any mental health history at all.
Mm.
So isn't that interesting? You have a 1.23 times higher risk of being diagnosed with depression if you take the pill.
Mm.
That is, it seems small, but it's actually big.
Quite significant, yeah.
There was also another Danish study. The Danes are all over the contraception, aren't they?
Good on them. Go the Danes.
Another study, I guess it was the same researchers actually following this study, and they followed around 500,000 women, and they wanted to see the effect of not just the contraceptive pill on depression, but the contraceptive effect on suicide and the risk of attempting suicide. So they followed 500,000 women around for 8 years, and they found that among those 500,000 women, they obviously eliminated any women who had any sign of mental health symptoms, any previous suicidal ideation. So these are women who had no mental health history, were totally okay. And they found that 7,000 of those women attempted suicide, and 71 of those suicides were, I guess, successful in the terms of they took their life. So 71 women of the 500,000 took their life following beginning a contraceptive pill cycle.
Mm.
Isn't that scary? Whoever says that, what doctor is going to be like, oh, by the way.
And I actually think, and I know this is a pretty bold statement, I actually think it's negligence on doctors who prescribe the pill without specifying that there are mental health factors when taking this medication.
Imagine if you're already vulnerable.
Mm.
Imagine if you're already low or you're feeling suicidal and then you take the pill.
Without knowing. And obviously there is some responsibility on you in taking the medication, but also we trust doctors. Yeah. We trust medical professionals to advise us
absolutely
of the side effects when taking medication as prescribers of medication. Yeah. So I definitely do think it's negligence. Absolutely.
I have never been asked by a doctor, do you have a history of suicidal thoughts or ideation? Have you ever attempted suicide? Not once.
Or how's your mood?
How's your mental health?
A simple DAS, you know, the DAS-21 to kind of see where assess, you fit on a scale.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's definitely something that needs further investigation when prescribing the pill, especially to young adolescents. Women.
Yeah. Well, this study found that it was most common among adolescents.
Mm, of course.
Of course, because their hormones are all going crazy there. The association between hormonal contraceptive use and first suicide attempt peaked after the first 2 months.
Mm.
So the first 2 months and thereafter was when it was a really highly vulnerable time.
Because that's when our hormones haven't stabilized
yet. Exactly. Mm. It takes about 3 to 4 months for your hormones to start, even up to 6 to 12 months for them to stabilize. So, you know, that is a huge statistic that, I've never heard before studying this.
And I think this study shows that, yes, there is a correlation between the pill and depression. So it doesn't prove that the pill is the cause of depression or suicide. But I think the most important aspect that this study highlights is that more research in this field is needed to really gauge the mental health effects of the pill, because I think it's so inadequately addressed.
Absolutely. So if you're listening and you're thinking, all right, what does the pill have to do with my fluctuations in mood? What does it have to do with increasing chances of depression or suicidal attempts or anything that changes your normal state? How does it do it? Well, serotonin, which is the chemical, the neurotransmitter that makes us feel happy, that also functions as a hormone. And we are feeling, as Amy said before, the pill is a synthetic hormone. So that can come from the pill. A synthetic version of estrogen can be found in the pill. That influences pain transmission, our feelings of pain. It influences headache. It influences nausea, and it influences our mood. So this is because there is something called a serotonergic signaling. So there is a huge interplay between serotonin and the synthetic hormone of estrogen. And it depends, I guess everybody's different, and how it responds in your body might be very different to somebody else, because we all have very different makeups of our brain chemicals. But generally, this is a bit of a lucky dip, because if you are someone who has a lower serotonin levels, then there's a higher chance that the synthetic estrogen in the pill can wreak havoc on your mood.
Exactly. Synthetic hormone contraceptives are associated with functional and structural changes in the brain that affect cognitive performance, behavior, personality, and emotion. And there are several proposed mechanisms on how hormonal contraceptives affect the brain and behavior.
Yeah. And studies have even found that fluctuating estrogen and its interactive relationships with serotonin can directly impact on brain activation during working memory and effective processing. So it's not just your emotions, but it's your working memory and it's your effective processing, which is what you need to get through a day. So it's even going further than emotional stuff. It's going into your cognitive functioning.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And side note, hormonal contraceptives also reduce the endogenous testosterone, which reduces the availability of testosterone. And that has numerous effects, but it basically creates estrogen dominance. And in some cases, this actually decreases your sex drive. So if you're noticing, obviously, all this other stuff going on as well with your mood and that kind of thing. But one thing that I've noticed, and other people that I've spoken to, friends and clients included, is that you might experience a decrease in your sex drive and sexual function as well. So it is like a physical, psychological, emotional, kind of all-encompassing change in function and behavior.
Yeah. Testosterone is so important for women as well. You might hear that and think, oh, testosterone's for men and estrogen is for women, but that's actually wrong. We each have some level of testosterone and some of estrogen. Even men have estrogen and women have testosterone. Testosterone can be really helpful for regulating mood. It can be helpful for sex drive. It can be helpful for physical activity. So we need some level of testosterone. But if you're taking synthetic hormones that are pumping your body full of estrogen, then there will be an estrogen dominance, which can wreak absolute havoc on your, you know, not just your neurotransmitters, the brain, you know, the makeup of your brain and its chemicals. It can really just affect so much.
Yeah. So basically what we're saying is the contraceptive pill has the potential to cause low mood, anxiety, depression, irritability, lower stress tolerance, and tearfulness. Because sometimes people, your symptoms basically might just be that you cry really easily. And that might be something that you think, oh, like I'm
it's just me.
It's just me. It might also not be. One thing I find fascinating is that people have done so many studies on the effect of anabolic steroids and research in how they show significant and functional changes to the brain with steroid users. Yet we have such an inadequate range in data for the pill, which has been around since 1960.
I was looking at this and I was like, there is not actually many studies out there to investigate the pill. And you know why? Because pharmaceutical companies are so wealthy and they're so influential. If there is a study out there saying that the pill is not good for you, they might be in their best interest to not want to publish it. And there's also, it was really interesting, Ames, when I was looking at the benefits of the pill, I was trying to find anything. They were all sponsored by a pharmaceutical company. So if there is a study that's sponsored by someone, there is some bias there. And we can probably assume that it's not the most valid.
What are the
results?
Intentions behind
exactly
that?
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's time as women to start questioning
medical advice.
Yeah,
but your doctor is not always right. If you are someone who's taking the pill and you're experiencing mood fluctuations, you're experiencing lows,
irritability,
you're experiencing highs even, this is not just you. This is not just you think you're being crazy or you're not just being silly. This could actually be something going on here. Amy and I have both experienced this firsthand. We know.
And we now know that in some women, the pill can trigger symptoms of depression, mood swings, and even suicidal ideation.
That's huge. And I don't know why this is not talked about. I also read a study. So the effect of menopause on mood disorders such as depression. So obviously menopause is the time where your estrogen is haywire. It's reducing its levels. In a US study that found that women who did not have any diagnosis of depression or no mental health history of depression, they found that there is a 2.7% chance that if you're going through menopause, you will be diagnosed with depression. And also perimenopausal period, which is the time before menopause, that is when your estrogen levels start to reduce and when you start to decline, and that's when your serotonin is more likely to drop. If you experience a long perimenopausal period, that is associated also with the increased risk of depression. So the longer the time before menopause, the perimenopausal period, the more likely you are to experience depression.
Mm.
Isn't that crazy? So I think with this, our brain tries so hard to ensure that the brain chemicals are all correct, but we don't. If you bring in foreign medication and things that are going to mess with that, it's really, really, really important to do your research. Because when I first researched the side effects of my pill, I had an overwhelming response of forums and websites that were like, oh my god, this pill makes me crazy. Yet nobody talks about it. So please, if you're someone who's on the pill and you're experiencing mood changes, please, please, please do your research and talk to your doctor. You know, they should be knowledgeable in this, or your pharmacist. Your pharmacist might also be a good person to talk to about this, your chemist.
And I think the take-home message for this is the pill, just like any other form of medication, has side effects and risks.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I came off the pill, man, my mood changed. Because Amy had mentioned to me, she's like, come off the pill and see how you feel. I was more vigilant to my mood. I reckon about 2 months after I came off, I was a different person. It was really interesting as well, because Josh and I were fighting a lot. We were having so many arguments. I was feeling really low on myself. I had a lot of, I guess, confidence issues. 2 months later, I was a different person. And it's crazy to think that one pill has done all that. It has made me, I look back, I'm like, oh my god, why was I on it for so long? Like, it made me so sad, and it made me so low, and it made me not believe in, like, it's really funny, but it made me not believe in myself.
It can alter your personality.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Isn't that mind-blowing?
Yeah.
That this little tiny pill that everyone just takes without any real medical
knowledge, background research,
can have such a major effect on your overall functioning as a person.
So please do your research, guys. It's so, so important. And please talk to a medical professional.
And if this hits home for you, I remember, like, when I was talking to Kat about this, someone who is an educated individual and just wasn't aware.
I wasn't connecting the dots. I was blaming it on so many other things. I was like, oh, it's because work's stressful, it's because my relationship's breaking down, it's because, you know, I was also blaming myself. I was like, maybe I'm just being silly, I'm just being emotional, why am I being upset, this is so ridiculous, I don't have any cause to be emotional. But when I look back, I'm like, yes, I did. My brain was in havoc, the neurotransmitters were all over the joint, my chemicals were all out of whack. And so please, yeah, please, 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 I hope this, just, you know, for at least one person, please do your research. And if you're
going, and get your hormones checked. Absolutely. It's as simple as a blood test.
Yeah, absolutely.
Alrighty, so jumping into our Q&A section.
Favorite time of the party. Alrighty, so first question, Haddo, what have you got for me?
First question is,
oh, it's a good one.
Okay, so if the person is amazing, puts you first, etc., but you don't feel the chemistry, holy hell, I can relate to this
on a personal level.
Such a personal level, it's not funny.
Okay, so if, so read that again.
All right, so if the person is amazing, for example, puts you first, etc., but you just don't feel the chemistry.
Oh, this is a trigger for you.
It is a little bit of a trigger, to be honest. I found this happens to me quite often. And I think it's just a case of some people you will have chemistry with and some people you won't, and that's okay.
And you cannot force chemistry.
You can't force it.
No.
It's there or it's not. Yeah. And I think people fall into the trap of thinking, oh my goodness, they're such a great person. They're so amazing. They tick all my boxes on paper. I'll just stay with them and maybe the chemistry will develop. Maybe it won't. And maybe you'll waste months and months and months of your time with someone where you knew the chemistry wasn't there, but you thought because they were right on paper that you should just stick it out.
Absolutely. And I've dated partners in the past that have been so right on paper but zero chemistry, and so wrong on paper but all the chemistry. So there is no right or wrong with who you fall for, but unfortunately you can't force it, and it's very unpredictable. Also, it's, I guess, the other side of it, it's really good to remember that romance isn't a fairy tale. No. You're not supposed to, I guess, you know, different relationships call for different chemistry. So some relationships you might have that fireworks, that spark, that chemistry, that sexual attraction. Limerence. But some other relationships, it might be a slow burn. You might have a little bit of chemistry or a little, you know, a little bit of something that you have in common with them, and then it builds gradually as you get to know them. Mm. You know, so there's really different types of chemistry, but
so the person is amazing, puts you first, etc., but you don't feel chemistry. So I think if you don't feel chemistry at all, like there's no chemistry,
and you've given it some time,
you probably know that that person's not for you.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Which sucks. It's the suckiest thing, because if you could force chemistry and flick a switch, it would be amazing. But unfortunately, you cannot force chemistry.
Good luck. It might be a good friend.
Yeah. Good luck for that one. That's really tricky to navigate.
Alrighty. I think I am falling out of love. Any advice? I don't want to lose him. I want to rekindle it.
Oh, God, we're getting some loaded questions.
We are.
Aren't we?
Okay. So what I would say to this person is that sometimes that happens. Sometimes we do fall out of love. I guess without knowing any other background information, it is a little bit difficult, but I would maybe focus on, has something changed? Has something happened to make you feel like you're falling out of love? For example, do you feel like your relationship has kind of become a little bit mundane? Have you lost more of the desire component to your relationship?
Because those stuff is actually normal. If I mean, depending on the stage of your relationship, but if there's a feeling of mundane or a feeling of routine, that's actually quite normal. It doesn't mean you're falling out of love with them. It just means that you're progressing to the next stage of your relationship. But if you feel like there is a falling out of love in terms of you don't
have the same feelings,
then that's, you know, a different story as well. So it's just evaluating where you're at in the relationship and just measuring where you're at in your relationship. Is it normal to feel this stuff? Because there is, you know, we said now one of our last episodes, there is a feeling of sometimes complacency and sometimes a wondering eye if you're at a level of your relationship where you're, you know, you've settled into routine with them, you've got to know them. I guess that is normal. And as we said, you know, start to find some of that spontaneity again, go on dates, you know, try and rekindle it that way. But if it's a different feeling to that in terms of you just have tried everything and you just don't are falling out of love with them, then I think
My advice for this listener who says she feels like she's falling out of love and wants to rekindle it would be two things. The first would be, what do you need in the relationship to feel love? And the second would be, perhaps spend some time in solitude and work on yourself to really figure out what that need is.
Is it just a miscommunication of love languages? Are they not giving you the love that you're really, really yearning for and you're wanting? Or is it something else?
What was it at the start that made you feel in love to what's happened now, feeling like you've fallen out of love? And then go from there.
Yeah. Good luck with that one. All right. How do you get a sense of identity back? Busy being a mum, wife, etc. just seems like I have no time for me. Wow. This is a really, really good question.
It's an amazing question.
And this is, please know that this is normal. The identity crisis that comes after childbirth is so unspoken about, but it's so normal. And that really plays into postnatal depression as well. It's this really confusing time. It's, who am I? I was this person and now I'm someone different. I think that this question is so important for mums out there because you might tend to feel lost as a mum sometimes.
Or like you've lost yourself.
Yeah. And with that probably comes some feelings of guilt, because if you're someone who's pregnant and gone through childbirth and have a beautiful baby or child, you might think, oh my God, I'm so lucky. Why am I worrying about me?
Could also feel resentful that look at all the sacrifice I've made for this little being. And now what am I left with? Exactly. And that's normal to feel as well. And you shouldn't feel guilty for feeling that.
Or a question of, I should be happy, but I've lost me. It's having a child is so confusing. There's so many changes and transitions in identity and responsibility and relationships. I think it is so important to find your identity as much as you can. Mm. While being a mom is fantastic, that doesn't have to be your identity.
And how do you do that? So getting a sense of identity back after giving birth or after becoming a mom is focusing on what makes you feel like you.
Mm.
Yeah. So if you used to do something for yourself and you feel like now that you have a baby, you can't do that. Even if you can't do it in the full capacity that you used to, what part or what section of that can you still do? So, for example, if you were an artist and, you know, you used to work in an art gallery. This is just off the top of my head. Used to work in an art gallery and now you've given up your job to be a full-time mum, but your passion is art, paint, do something artistic. Yeah.
Creative.
Don't lose that part of yourself completely because you're a mum.
You'll end up resenting your child if you were someone who played a lot of sport but now can't. If you were someone who loved your job, what was it about that job that you loved? I think that's really important. If you can't go back to work, what was it about that job? Was it the power? Was it the responsibility? Was it just that you were autonomous and independent from your child? Because that can be found in other areas of your life.
Purpose. Mm. I feel like what a lot of women miss about their, I guess, old self, if you want to say you've lost your identity, your old self, is having a purpose other than just being mum, other than just being a mother.
Yeah.
So how can you fulfill your purpose while raising a child? Mm. And that's really tricky. But I think it's about definitely finding your passion or utilizing parts of your passion to fulfill your purpose. Yeah.
And is it interesting when you have a baby? I guess everyone goes from asking, how are you, to how's the baby?
Mm.
Nobody really, I mean, I guess it's just a social norm to be like, oh, how's Bob? How are they going? No, I guess people start to forget to ask about you and they see you as like a joint venture rather than just like, you know, two single beings together.
Yeah.
So I think also it's so important, and we cannot stress this enough, to have time for yourself. So if there's a way, I know it's really hard sometimes, but if there's a way that's feasible for you to put your child into the care of somebody else, even for a short amount of time, to do something that you love to do, like Amy was saying, even if that's just time on your own, because the more time you spend with a baby, the more you start to forget your identity, because you start to become this joint being instead of two separate beings.
Mm. And I think for a lot of women too, and this is generalized, but it's something that I hear and see a lot in clinical work, is that women feel like so much pressure and the onus of the responsibility of that child is all on them. And for some single mothers or single parents, that can be hard to avoid. Mm. But if you're fortunate enough to be in a relationship and you've got, you know, a husband or a partner or, someone with you, to really make sure that responsibility is shared.
Yeah,
so absolutely. The onus isn't all on you. So I know I actually heard this. It was really funny. I had a parent say, oh, dad's babysitting tonight. No, dad isn't babysitting. He's parenting.
Yep. It's so automatic to assume that mom is the primary caregiver, isn't it?
Yeah.
And to think that, oh, wow, dad, you know what I find really irritating? Dad's stepping in. Wow. Mm. Like, good on you, dad. It's like, No. I've been here for 80% of the time. What about me? And dads go to work and mums stay home.
Like, generally,
That's very conventional. I'm very stereotypical here. But generally, that's the pattern at the moment. And so mums have to give up their job, have to give up their identity, have to give up their independence, have to give up their financial independence and security to depend on somebody else. And when you're depending on somebody else, it's a natural progression to lose your identity.
Mm.
And your sense of self. So as Amy was saying, please find the thing that makes you feel you. Whatever it is, how big or small it is,
your purpose.
It's knitting, painting, singing, basketball, dancing,
sport,
anything, whether it's just having time for yourself.
Your girlfriends, spend time with your girlfriends.
If you're not sure of what it is that makes you, ask everybody around you. What is it about me that you like? Mm. What about me is different to everybody else? I guarantee you'll have so many people be like, oh my God, I love this and this and this and this. Sometimes we forget that about ourselves. So if you're finding it hard to find your own self, people around you are the best the next best knowledge base of who you are.
And know that you're not alone and it's normal to feel that way. Giving birth and raising children is the toughest job you'll ever do.
Yeah, absolutely. It is harder than any job in the whole world, especially when you might feel alone in this. I would also recommend to reach out for parenting and
groups,
mother groups, because
they can be great.
I think knowing that you're not alone can be such a weight off your shoulders. So hugely, highly recommend that. So good luck with that one. That's a really tricky one, but we hope that that was a little bit helpful. But please know this is very normal.
Yeah. And that is our last question of the day. So we'll wrap up another podcast.
Alrighty, guys. We will see you next time for something very spicy.
Of course. And we always say that when we don't know what we're recording next. We'll see you for some more spice next time.
All right, guys. Bye. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening. If you love this episode or you know someone who might, we would love you to share this with them. If you want to see more, please follow us on our Instagram at The Psychology Sisters.
Please note the content shared in this episode is for educational and general informational purposes only and does not replace personalised advice and support from mental health professional. See you next episode for more spicy science and sexy self-help.